that we've talked about at the very beginning of the quarter relating to Isaiah. One of the major themes that dominates this section of Isaiah, really the first 39 chapters, is the idea that of God the King. And remember, in chapter 6, Isaiah got this amazing picture of God seated on his throne, high and lifted up. And God commissioned Isaiah to go. So you have this idea of God the King, but not just God the King that's reigning like Isaiah saw him in chapter 6, but also throughout Isaiah, there's talk of this King that's going to come, this King that's going to arrive. And so you'll see lots of verses that are foreshadowing the arrival of Jesus and you know, the King that God had predestined to show up and to conquer and to save and to bring light to the world. And so throughout these verses and chapters that we're going through, you see this, that God is ruling as King, but also God is going to send the perfect King. And so keep that in mind as we go through these sections of Isaiah. But also going along with that, because God is the King and God rules all, He's the ruler of history. I mean, He controls what happens historically. And that's going to be a major theme. Hopefully we'll get to specifically today toward the end, is this idea of the events of history are completely in the control of God. And He is the King that is ruling and orchestrating what happens with the nations. And so with that in mind, let's just kind of look at the historically what we talked about last time. Isaiah is prophesying specifically now to Ahaz himself, the king of Judah. And the problem with Ahaz, or his problem, is that Syria and Israel have joined forces and are attacking Judah because they want Judah to be part of their coalition too, that can withstand the Assyrians. All right, and so Syria and Israel have joined up. They're trying to make Judah part of their rule too, so that hopefully in this combined effort they can withstand Assyria. And what Ahaz is told is, you don't have to solve this problem. You don't have to find a way to fix the problem that Syria and Israel are attacking you. That's not your job to fix your problem. You need to trust in God. You need to know that you live in Jerusalem, God's city, and you are in the line of kings that come from David, the line that's never supposed to fade, that God said He would keep going. You need to trust in God, and you need to trust that God's going to handle this. Well, Ahaz doesn't. And what Ahaz does is he decides, I'm going to pledge my loyalty to Assyria, and I'm going to ask for their help, and I'm going to ask the king of Assyria to take care of Syria and Israel for me and to stop them from attacking me. And so Ahaz puts his trust in Assyria, and that's where his priorities are. That's where his loyalty is. And so there's two ways to look at what's going to happen. Historically, politically, all of that. Ahaz is gonna see it this way, that I've asked Assyria for help, and they're gonna come and they're gonna destroy Syria and Israel, and they have helped me. And Assyria will come and destroy Syria and then Israel. But then Assyria is gonna be so power hungry, they're also just gonna come and attack Ahaz and Judah. And so, you know, Ahaz is going to see, oh no, the nation that I pledge my loyalty to now is oppressing me and has come after me. Well, that's how Ahaz sees it. That I asked them for help, they did take care of my enemies, but now they are attacking me. But if we just think about it the way Isaiah talks about it and the way God talks about it, it's a completely different way of looking at it. What God says is, I'm going to use Assyria. I'm going to use Assyria and I'm going to have them destroy Syria and Israel. I, God, am going to have them do that. And then Ahaz, because of your lack of faith in me and because of the nation's lack of faith in me, all of Judah, I'm going to bring Assyria on you and punish you with Assyria. I'm going to use Assyria to punish you. And so it's the same events, but what God is saying is, I'm doing it. I'm causing it to happen. It's not just something that happened because leaders and kings decided they were going to do these things. It's happening because I'm the one orchestrating it. And what God is going to say is, these nations are my tools that I am using to accomplish my goals. But if you don't have a godly perspective, you just see it as, well, here's the things that the men and the nations and the kings are all doing. And so that's going to be a huge part of the faith that's required to withstand all of these events that are happening. And so we'll get more into this in chapter 10. But let's just real quick focus on the name Emmanuel, that means God is with us or God with us, that was mentioned earlier, but it's going to be mentioned again in Isaiah chapter 8. God is saying, he's mentioning the waters of Shiloah. And the waters of Shiloah are just, it's just a normal, calm stream that runs through Jerusalem. It's a nice stream. It's a stream that waters Jerusalem. It's the stream that they get their water from. I mean, it's a great stream. But God is going to say, they don't care about the waters of Shiloah. They don't care about the water that flows through Jerusalem. They're not content with Jerusalem. They care about what's going on with Assyria. And the Assyrians live near the Euphrates River, which is a big, mighty river. And so what God is saying is, you're not content with the stream of Shiloah. You're not content with that. You're so focused on the Euphrates River because that's where Assyria is. And so listen to these words. He says, because this people has refused the waters of Shiloah that flow gently and rejoice over Rezin and the son of Remaliah. Now when he says that the people of Judah, they rejoice over Rezin and the son of Remaliah. Probably what he's saying is they rejoice that, hey, the Assyrians destroyed Rezin and the son of Remaliah. They've helped us out. They've taken care of that. So he's saying, because this people has refused the waters of Shiloah that flow gently and rejoice over Rezin and the son of Remaliah, therefore, behold, the Lord is bringing up against them the waters of the river, mighty and many, the king of Assyria and all his glory. And it will rise over all its channels and go over all its banks, and it will sweep on into Judah. It will overflow and pass on, reaching even to the neck. And it will its outspread wings will fill the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. So God is using the idea of a river as a metaphor, saying you're not happy with the Jerusalem stream. You're so focused on Assyria that just like the Euphrates River, the Assyrians are going to flood into your land. All right, and just, you know, we don't really see that as much in our country, but In other countries, when you got a rainy season, the river just completely overflows, pours over the land, spills over its banks. The floodplains are just covered in water. God says, that's what Assyria is going to do. Like a river, Assyria is just going to flood out of the river, flood into your land, spread over your land, cover everything. You're going to be just flooded with Assyrians. And he says it's going to reach even to the neck. So like it's going to almost completely engulf you. And probably the idea there is it's going to engulf everything except maybe the city of Jerusalem will still be there. But all of Judah will just be flooded with Assyrians like a river overflows its banks. And God's point is because you couldn't focus on Jerusalem, you couldn't focus on my city, you couldn't focus on what I've given you, you're loyal to the people of the river. and you're loyal to the Assyrians that dwell by the Euphrates, and you fear them, and you've pledged loyalty to them, and you care more about them instead of caring about me and my city and Jerusalem and the waters that flow through Jerusalem. But you'll notice he says, one, that like a bird, Assyria will just, with its outstretched wings, just cover the land. But then it ends, you know, addressing Emmanuel, that its outspread wings will fill the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. And he's already mentioned Emmanuel, that there'll be this child born, and that what happens with this child will be a sign that God is going to have come to pass, what he said is going to come to pass. That what happens with this child will show that what God promised and what God prophesied will come about. But if you think about what the name Emmanuel means, this is kind of a scary and ironic person to address this prophecy to. Not that it's literally talking to just this, you know, some guy named Emmanuel, but you know, to poetically have Emmanuel be referred to, because it means God is with us. But think about this passage. Is it describing God with the people of Judah? Well, yeah, it's just not a pleasant way for God to be with them. But God is saying, you know, I'm going to have Assyria come and just flood your land. Because you've rejected me, I'm going to pour the Assyrians into your land. I'm going to just devastate you with Assyria. And yeah, I'm with you, but I'm with you in judgment. I'm with you in, you know, in bringing on oppression. And so, you know, that's the, you know, the thing that's terrifying is, you know, there's times when God is with his people, but not in a way where he's with them to you know, give them blessings and you know, have this relationship with them where he's bringing them peace and joy. Sometimes he's with them to bring on destruction and bring on judgment. And then the next verses kind of show the opposite, where you have what seems like maybe Isaiah himself, or at least just in general, like a person of faith, who in the midst of Assyria says this: "Be broken, you peoples, and be shattered. Give ear, all you far countries. Strap on your armor and be shattered. Strap on your armor and be shattered. Take counsel together, but it will come to nothing. Speak a word, but it will not stand, for God is with us." And so you have the same phrase there, but now it's in the midst of Assyria flooding into our land, destroying our towns, killing our people, taking captive people in our cities. In the midst of what looks like just complete destruction, Isaiah and the people of faith say, doesn't matter, God is with us. So you kind of have the same idea of God being with them, but the people of faith say, God is with us and we're going to trust in him. The people that don't have faith are saying, oh no, God is with us and he's bringing judgment. And so you have those kind of things that Isaiah is touching on here. But let's go on now and talk about one of the other verses in chapter 8 that I think is critical. And we talked about this last time, but Isaiah's name means the Lord saves. And so like a lot of people, and especially prophets in the Bible, their names really are representative of who they are and what they're doing. And so what Isaiah represents is the salvation of the Lord. And he's got a son that is named Shear Yashub, whose name means a remnant will return. And that's a prominent theme that Isaiah is prophesying about, that there is destruction coming and only a remnant are going to be saved. You know, that, and that's something that this son of Isaiah is supposed to kind of embody, that message. You know, my name is a remnant shall return. And that's something important for you to remember, because only a remnant will return. So when you see me, remember that those words that Isaiah has spoken. Remember God's prophecy about a remnant returning. And then Isaiah has another son whose name is Mahershalal Hashbaz. that means quick to the plunder. And Isaiah has already explained that quick to the plunder is you know, kind of a shortened phrase to represent the prophecies Isaiah has given that destruction's coming to Syria and Israel. They're going to be overthrown. So when you see my son, Mahershalal Hashbaz, he's a representation of God's words that are going to come to pass. And Isaiah even took that name, you know, quick to the plunder, and wrote it down and posted it publicly to remind the people, God said Syria and Israel were going to fall. He said he was going to destroy them. So when it happens, you can know that God said it was going to happen, which means God controls history. My son is named that. When you see my son, you'll remember that God said Israel and Syria were going to be destroyed. You know, and so all of these names and these people really represent the messages throughout Isaiah, which I think is why then Isaiah says, behold, I and the children whom the Lord has given me are signs and portents in Israel from the Lord of hosts who dwells on Mount Zion. That these people embody the words of the Lord. They're kind of, you know, prophetic reminders, walking around, talking and speaking that you know, see and remember, you know, the messages that Isaiah is saying to the people. So any thoughts or comments up to this point at all? I know I've said a lot. All right. Well, this is going to be something that we'll see as we go throughout Isaiah, we'll see Israel's destruction how if God said Israel would fall, then Judah can bet if God says Judah's going to fall, it's going to happen too. And we'll see that, you know, a remnant will be saved, and we'll see that the Lord saves all of that. Something just to note about a remnant will return. You know, it's kind of good news and bad news, right? It's you know, oh good, a remnant will be saved. A remnant will be spared. But at the same time, you know, that means everyone else is destroyed. Like, only a remnant is going to return. The rest will be destroyed. And that idea is just a common idea throughout the entire Bible. That those few that are faithful will be sustained, but most are not going to choose faith. Most are going to reject the Lord, so they won't be saved. I mean, that's just an idea that the Bible presents. So Isaiah said all of this, that destruction is coming, trust that God is going to bring it about, have faith in the Lord, know that the historical things he said would happen are going to happen. Syria and Israel are going to fall. Assyria is going to storm in and just take over and destroy. You know, remember God's words. And so he says, to the teaching and to the testimony, they will not speak according to this word. It's because they have no dawn. So what he's saying is, if people are going to reject what I've said and say, no, I think we can work it so that other things happen. Or maybe if we pray to these gods, something else will happen. Or maybe if we, you know, keep doing what we're doing, God, you know, God won't really bring about our destruction. Isaiah says, no, God has said what he said. He's going to do it. That's the teaching. That's what I've been telling you. Trust in that. It's sealed. I mean, that's going to happen. And he says, if they don't listen to that, they have no dawn. All right. So they're still in darkness. There's no light that's risen on them. They're people in darkness. And he talks about that these people that reject God's words, you know, they're people of darkness. They have no light. They're going to be destroyed. They're not going to see the light. And he says they will look to the earth, but behold, distress and darkness, the gloom of anguish, and they will be thrust into thick darkness. So Isaiah is saying those that reject the Lord are going to be in darkness, and not just, you know, like literal, there's no sunrise or something, but a sinful people that rejects God, that is being punished. I mean, just sin and death and hardship and turmoil because they haven't trusted God. And Isaiah is speaking to the people of Judah primarily, But he's also referring to what's going to happen with Israel. So even though he's not necessarily traveling up through the northern kingdom and saying all this to them, he is saying a lot of this about them, you know, that Israel, if they reject the Lord, they're going to be destroyed, you know, but Judah, when that happens, learn a lesson from that and don't do the same thing. And so really he is addressing, you know, the topic of both nations, northern and southern kingdom. But what's interesting then is how this message just kind of instantly changes. He says, those that reject the Lord, darkness, sin, death, shame, guilt. But then in verse 1 of chapter 9, he says, but there will be no gloom for her who was in anguish. In the former time, he brought into contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the latter time, he has made glorious the way of the sea, the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. All right, so in 2 Kings 15:29, we see that Zebulun and Naphtali, these are nations in Israel, in the north, they're one of the first tribes of Israel. They're one of the first tribes to get conquered and destroyed and taken away. Zebulun and Naphtali, they're so far north that, of course, if the Syrians are coming from the north, Zebulun and Naphtali are right there. They fall very quickly. And so they kind of have this huge shame over their heads just as a tribe that, you know, we were some of the first to fall, some of the first that were taken away. And that whole area was just filled with Assyrians and the Assyrian destruction. And that's what this verse in 2 Kings talks about. But what Isaiah is saying is, yeah, that happens. But just because Zebulun and Naphtali in that area, just because they're filled with guilt and shame and death and sin and darkness now, doesn't mean that's going to be the case later. Because Isaiah now is looking to the future and says, one day this area will receive light. One day, you know, the way of the sea, which is kind of a long road, but a huge major section of it just cuts right through Zebulun and Naphtali. But this area, also known as Galilee, is going to have a complete change happen to it. And that's what Matthew chapter 4 talks about. Let's look at a map. All right, so really basic map of the tribes of Israel. They really probably didn't look exactly like this at this point in Isaiah because so much battle and oppression from other countries had happened. But there's the region of Zebulun and Naphtali, all right, up toward the top. I mean, just one of the first ones to fall, one of the first ones to just be destroyed. But what Isaiah is saying is that people who are in gloom and darkness and shame and guilt now will in later times receive glory. They'll receive honor. They'll receive light. And if we look in the New Testament, that's the region where Jesus first starts preaching and teaching. That's where he begins his ministry, in that land. All right, so think of the contrast that Zebulun and Naphtali, just ultimate shame, first ones to fall, and yet, boom, when Jesus comes on the scene, they're just the first ones to receive light. And now God has taken what was shameful and full of sin and darkness and just shined light on it. And that's what Jesus did when he traveled through this area. And so that's what Isaiah is looking forward. And that's really just so much of the theme of the Bible, that a people that were in darkness have light now. I mean, that's what all of us who are Christians, that's our situation, that we had guilt and shame and darkness. And then Jesus came into our lives, and that the guilt and shame is gone because we have Jesus in our lives. And that's what the honor of that area is going to receive, that they were an area of shame, but now, you know, the King and the light and the Lord, you know, they're traveling through our area. We're some of the first to receive that. And that's what these verses talk about in chapter 9, 2 through 7. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwell in a land of deep darkness, on them has light shone. And then kind of skipping past a few verses. For the yoke of his burden and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, you have broken as on the day of Midian. And so just keep in mind with Midian you look back in the book of Judges when the Midianites just completely enslaved Israel, and just the Midianites were humongous, so many of them, Israel was just powerless. God very easily just defeats them. In fact, it's comedic how far God goes out of his way to show he doesn't even need people. He can just do it, so easily. And so that's what's happening. Just like how Midian was defeated, the burden, the staff for his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor will be destroyed. And what Isaiah is doing here is, looking at Assyrian oppression, but really looking forward to the real burden, the real oppressor, the real yoke that's on people, and that's the yoke of sin and death. That when the light comes, will just destroy the yoke of sin and death. And then Isaiah just describes now this child that'll bring all this about. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end, on the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. And so let me encourage us to go back, on our own time and just read through this chapter. Because it really is a chapter that you're reading about destruction and darkness, and then this beautiful child is described, and just what this child is going to grow up and do, and the light that's going to come from it. I mean, it really is a powerful set of verses. And Isaiah, once again, is looking forward to the king that's coming. I mean, that's just a prominent theme throughout this section. God is sending a king, the perfect king, the king that will completely conquer, the king that will bring ultimate peace, the king that will just spread light to all of the people in the kingdom. Just this glorious description of Jesus arriving on earth and doing what he was sent there to do. The line, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. God is the king. He is going to make this happen because he rules over everything. He's going to ensure that these things happen. That brings us then to these verses that really describe Israel's downfall. And we're not going to get into these, but the idea of Israel being destroyed because of their lack of faith, the northern kingdom falling. And really, Isaiah's message is, they're going to fall, they're falling, so Judah, don't make the same mistake. Look at what God said would happen, and it's happening. Think about what he said about you. The same thing will happen. So there's that idea. But the entire context is God using Assyria as a tool. So if you think about, who actually destroyed the northern kingdom of Israel? Well, the Assyrians, but also God, right? I mean, the Assyrians came in and destroyed the northern kingdom of Israel, but God said, it's me doing it. I'm the one that's doing that. And the next few verses in chapter 10 are some of my favorite verses in the book of Isaiah, because they describe this fascinating but also perplexing idea that God completely controls what the nations do, but also the nations have free will and have chosen to do it. And that doesn't really seem to make sense with our minds, right? That God says Assyria will do this, but the Assyrians also choose to do it. You're like, okay, well, if God's making it happen, do they have free will? But what these verses are showing is, both of those are true. They seem opposed to each other, that God could make a nation do something and the nation could have free will to choose to do it. Those seem in opposition, but this chapter shows both of them are true. And our human minds may have to like kind of wrestle with that. I don't know that we'll ever really get that God's hand brings something about, but the individuals involved freely choose to do it. They're not made to do it. You know, how does that work? But just look at these verses, how God describes him using Assyria, but Assyria also having their own motives and doing it of their own free will. He says, "Woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger. The staff in their hands is my fury. Against the godless nation I send him, and against the people of my wrath I command him, to take spoil and seize plunder, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. But he does not so intend, and his heart does not so think. But it is in his heart to destroy, and to cut off nations, not a few. For he says, are not my commanders all kings? Is not Calno like Carchemish? Is not Hamath like Arpad? Is not Samaria like Damascus? As my hand has reached to the kingdoms of the idols, whose carved images were greater than those of Jerusalem and Samaria, shall I not do to Jerusalem and her idols as I have done to Samaria and her images?" So God is saying here, Assyria, it's my rod that I'm using. It's my tool I'm using. But Assyria doesn't think so. In Assyria's heart, he's not trying to go and like, well, Israel's sinful. Let's go and punish them. No, in Assyria's heart, the king of Assyria, he's thinking, I'm going to go destroy because I'm going to take what I want and I have power. And he says, you know, I'm going to conquer Hamath like we conquered Arpad. And I'm going to conquer Calno like we conquered Carchemish. I'm going to conquer Samaria like we conquered Damascus. I've reached and taken whatever I wanted. Is Jerusalem going to be any different? And so there's this weird contrast that it's not really a contrast, but God's saying, I use Assyria. And Assyria's saying, I do it because I want to. And so you have this kind of, you know, almost a paradox, but both of those are true. And he goes on to say, when the Lord has finished all his work on Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, he will punish the speech of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the boastful look in his eyes. For he says, by the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I have understanding. I remove the boundaries of peoples and plunder their treasures. Like a bull, I bring down those who sit on thrones. My hand has found like a nest the wealth of the peoples. And as one gathers eggs that have been forsaken, so I have gathered all the earth. And there was none that moved a wing or opened the mouth or chirped. So that's what Assyria thinks. God says, when I'm done using Assyria, I'm going to punish Assyria. Because he thinks, I've been able to conquer and do all this because I'm so great and I take what I want. And just like, you know, somebody who reaches in and steals the eggs out of a nest, I've taken all the stuff from the earth. And nobody has flapped or chirped when I've taken the eggs from the nest. And then I love the words that God says here. Shall the axe boast over him who hews with it? Or the saw magnify itself against him who wields it? As if a rod should wield him who lifts it, or as if a staff should lift him who is not wood. Man, those are some great verses where God says, you know, Assyria, you're boasting that you're doing stuff and that you're the powerful one. You're my tool. As if a saw would turn around to the carpenter and say, I'm in charge. I'm the one that's doing stuff. The carpenter would say, it's not right at all. I'm using you to accomplish stuff. Or the idea that a staff, you know, would try and lift a man and use a man as a staff. You know, God's saying, yeah, right. You know, you think that's what's going on. You think that you're in control and you have power. But the saw has no power over the carpenter. The staff has no power over the shepherd. I am God. I am the ruler of history. I control what happens. But in your heart, you just want to destroy. You just want to conquer. You have pride. And I'm going to punish you. I'm going to bring you down once I've used you to accomplish what I want to happen. And this really is what God does with all the nations. That, you know, this is one of the points that David makes to King Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, that God controls the kingdoms of men. And he puts into power those he wants to be in power. Now, it's not a denial of man's free will, but it is, you know, exalting the fact that God is the king. And if he's the king, he rules. He controls. If he wants to conquer, he will use this nation and conquer that nation. If he wants to bring this nation down, he'll bring this nation down. And the nations better not think that they're doing anything because they're so great, because they have power. And all of this is because God sits upon his throne and rules the kingdoms of men. And I think the same thing is true today. I think the same thing has always been true, that whatever happens with any nation, God put those leaders in place, and God is using those nations however he wants. Now, the thing about, you know, our nation is that we have no idea what God is doing. God hasn't given us, you know, a prophet to say, here's what God is doing with America, or here's what God is doing with these countries. You know, we have no idea. There's just no revelation to us about, you know, how God is changing or using our country to have happen what he wants to have happen. We don't know. But we do know what he was doing with Israel and Judah and Syria and Assyria and Babylon and Egypt. You know, in those countries where we're given, you know, biblical accounts of what God was thinking and doing when he did those things. But all of this is just a humbling group of verses, really, for the people of Judah to hear and to know, how can we put our trust in Assyria? They're just the tool. They're not the carpenter. You know, they're just the staff. They're not the shepherd. How can we be afraid of them but not fear the one who's wielding them? How can we hope that maybe being loyal to them will help us out when we're disloyal to the one using the tool? I mean, all of this should affect the actions of the people of Judah. There should be a huge change because of this. Unfortunately, there really won't be. There's not going to be, at least in Ahaz's day, there's not going to be some nationwide repentance that will come with Hezekiah. But then God goes on to say, you know, his punishment. Therefore, the Lord God of hosts will send wasting sickness among his stout warriors, and under his glory a burning will be kindled, like the burning of fire. The light of Israel will become a fire, and his Holy One a flame, and it will burn and devour his thorns and briars in one day. The glory of his forest and of his fruitful land the Lord will destroy, both soul and body. And it will be as when a sick man wastes away. The remnant of the trees of his forest will be so few that a child can write them down. So God's describing here, here's what I'm going to do to Assyria that thinks they're in control and thinks they've got all the power. I'm going to then use Israel, and I'm going to ignite Israel, and the Holy One of Israel will be this flame, and I'm just going to burn down Assyria. And the glory that Assyria thought they had is going to be burned down. You know, their forests, you know, metaphorically, but their forests will be so destroyed. They'll have so few trees that a kid could count them. Right? So think about Assyria and just how much land they're going to acquire. And yet a child could count all the trees that are left when God is done with it. Like 10. Does a child count to 10? You know, that's what'll be left when God stops using his tool and then punishes the tool and brings us about. So all of this, I mean, is just powerful language and just astounding insights into what God is thinking and doing when it comes to the nations. Hopefully, motivating the people to turn to God and trust that God is with us no matter what. We need to be with God. So, all right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.